then ready to introduce himself, explain how they'd come in peace, maybe tell a few jokes, and offer breath mints.
"So you were expecting us then," Leo said.
"I can tell because you're both so excited." Apollo plucked a tune that sounded like the funeral version of Camp Town Races.
"We were expecting to be found, bothered, and tormented. We didn't know by whom. Can you not leave us in our misery?"
"You know they can't, brother," Artemis chided. "They require our help with their quest, even if the odds are hopeless."
"You two are full of good cheer," Leo said. "Why are you hiding out here anyway? Shouldn't you be, I don't know, fighting giants or something?"
Artemis's pale eyes made Leo feel like he was a deer carcass about to be gutted.
"Delos is our birthplace," said the goddess. "Here we are unaffected by the Greek-Roman schism. Believe me, Leo Valdez, if I could, I would be with my hunters, facing our old enemy Orion. Unfortunately, if I stepped off this island, I would become incapacitated with pain. All I can do is watch helplessly while Orion slaughters my followers. Many gave their lives to protect your friends and that accursed Athena statue."
Hazel made a strangled sound.
"You mean Nico? Is he all right?"
"All right?"
Apollo sobbed over his ukulele.
"None of us are all right, girl. Gia is rising."
Artemis glared at Apollo.
"Hazel Levesque, your brother is still alive. He is a brave fighter like you. I wish I could say the same for my brother."
"You wrong me," Apollo wailed. "I was misled by Gia and that horrible Roman child."
Frank cleared his throat.
Lord Apollo, you mean Octavian?"
"Do not speak his name."
Apollo strummed a minor chord.
"Oh, Frank Jong, if only you were my child. I heard your prayers, you know, all those weeks you wanted to be claimed. But alas, Mars gets all the good ones. I get... that creature as my descendant. He filled my head with compliments. He told me of the great temples he would build in my honor."
Artemis snorted.
"You are easily flattered, brother."
"Because I have so many amazing qualities to praise. Octavian said he wanted to make the Romans strong again. I said, fine. I gave him my blessing."
"As I recall," said Artemis, "he also promised to make you the most important god of the Legion, above even Zeus."
"Well, who was I to argue with an offer like that? Does Zeus have a perfect tan? Can he play the ukulele? I think not. But I never thought Octavian would start a war. Gia must have been clouding my thoughts, whispering in my ear."
Leo remembered the crazy wind dude Aeolus, who'd gone homicidal after hearing Gia's voice.
"So fix it," he said. "Tell Octavian to stand down. Or, you know, shoot him with one of your arrows. That would be fine, too."
"I cannot," Apollo wailed. "Look!"
His ukulele turned into a bow. He aimed at the sky and shot. The golden arrow sailed about 200 feet, then disintegrated into smoke.
"To shoot my bow, I would have to step off Delos," Apollo cried. "Then I would be incapacitated, or Zeus would strike me down. Father never liked me. He hasn't trusted me for millennia."
"Well," Artemis said, "to be fair, there was that time you conspired with Hera to overthrow him."
"That was a misunderstanding."
"And you killed some of Zeus's Cyclopes."
"I had a good reason for that. At any rate, now Zeus blames me for everything. Octavian's schemes, the fall of Delphi."
"Wait."
Hazel made a timeout sign.
"The fall of Delphi?"
Apollo's bow turned back into a ukulele. He plucked a dramatic chord.
"When the schism began between Greek and Roman, While I struggled with confusion, Gia took advantage. She raised my old enemy Python, the Great Serpent, to repossess the Delphic Oracle. That horrible creature is now coiled in the ancient caverns, blocking the magic of prophecy. I am stuck here, so I can't even fight him.
Bummer, Leo said, though secretly he thought that no more prophecies might be a good thing. His to-do list was already pretty full.
Bummer indeed, Apollo sighed. Zeus was already angry with me for appointing that new girl, Rachel Dare, as my oracle. Zeus seems to think I hastened the war with Gia by doing so, since Rachel issued the prophecy of 7 as soon as I blessed her. But prophecy doesn't work that way. Father just needed someone to blame. So, of course, he picked the handsomest, most talented, hopelessly awesome god.
Artemis made a gagging gesture.
Oh, stop it, sister, Apollo said. You're in trouble, too.
Only because I stayed in touch with my hunters against Zeus's wishes, Artemis said.
But I can always charm Father into forgiving me. He's never been able to stay mad at me. It's you I'm worried about.
I'm worried about me, too, Apollo agreed. We have to do something. We can't kill Octavian.
Perhaps we should kill these demigods.
Whoa there, music man. Leo resisted the urge to hide behind Frank and yell, Take the big Canadian dude.
We're on your side, remember?
Why would you kill us?
It might make me feel better, Apollo said. I have to do something.
Or, Leo said quickly, you could help us. See, we've got this plan. He told them how Hera had directed them to Delos, and how Nike had described the ingredients for the physician's cure.
The physician's cure?
Apollo stood and smashed his ukulele on the stones.
That's your plan.
Leo raised his hands.
Hey, usually I'm all for smashing ukuleles, but...
I cannot help you, Apollo cried.
If I told you the secret of the physician's cure, Zeus would never forgive me.
You're already in trouble, Leo pointed out. How could it get worse?
Apollo glared at him. If you knew what my father is capable of, mortal, you would not ask. It would be simpler if I just smote you all. That might please Zeus.
Brother, Artemis said. The twins locked eyes and had a silent argument. Apparently, Artemis won. Apollo heaved a sigh and kicked his broken ukulele across the stage.
Artemis rose. Hazel Levesque, Frank Jong, come with me. There are things you should know about the 12th Legion. As for you, Leo Valdez.
The goddess turned those cold silver eyes on him.
Apollo will hear you out. See if you can strike a deal. My brother always likes a good bargain.
Frank and Hazel both glanced at him like, please don't die. Then they followed Artemis up the steps of the amphitheater and over the crest of the hill.
Well, Leo Valdez?
Apollo folded his arms. His eyes glowed with golden light.
Let us bargain then. What can you offer that would convince me to help you rather than kill you?
Chapter 34. Leo.
A bargain.
Leo's fingers twitched.
Yeah, absolutely.
His hands went to work before his mind knew what he was doing. He started pulling things out of the pockets of his magic tool belt. Copper wire, some bolts, a brass funnel. For months, he'd been stashing away bits and pieces of machinery because he never knew what he might need. And the longer he used the belt, the more intuitive it became. He'd reach in and the right items would simply appear.
So the thing is, Leo said as his hands twisted wire, Zeus is already PO'd at you, right? If you help us defeat Gia, you could make it up to him.
Apollo wrinkled his nose.
I suppose that's possible,
but it would be easier to smite you.
What kind of ballad would that make? Leo's hands worked furiously, attaching levers, fastening the metal funnel to an old gear shaft.
You're the god of music, right? Would you listen to a song called Apollo Smites a Runty Little Demigod?
I wouldn't. But Apollo defeats the Earth Mother and saves the freaking universe.
That sounds like a Billboard chart topper.
Apollo gazed into the air, as if envisioning his name on a marquee.
What do you want exactly? And what do I get out of it?
First thing I need. Advice.
Leo strung some wires across the mouth of the funnel.
I want to know if a plan of mine will work.
Leo explained what he had in mind. He'd been chewing on the idea for days, ever since Jason came back from the bottom of the sea and Leo started talking with Nike.
A primordial god has been defeated once before, Chemopolia had told Jason. You know of whom I speak.
Leo's conversations with Nike had helped him fine-tune the plan, but he still wanted a second opinion from another god, because once Leo committed himself, there would be no going back. He half-hoped Apollo would laugh and tell him to forget it. Instead, the god nodded thoughtfully.
I will give you this advice for free. You might be able to defeat Gia in the way you describe, similar to the way Ouranos was defeated eons ago. However, any mortal close by would be utterly...
Apollo's voice faltered.
What is that you have made?
Leo looked down at the contraption in his hands. Layers of copper wires like multiple sets of guitar strings crisscrossed inside the funnel. Rows of striking pins were controlled by levers on the outside of the cone, which was fixed to a square metal base with a bunch of crank handles.
Oh, this?
Leo's mind raced furiously. The thing looked like a music box fused with an old-fashioned phonograph. But what was it?
A bargaining chip.
Artemis had told him to make a deal with Apollo. Leo remembered a story the kids in Cabin 11 used to brag about, how their father Hermes had avoided punishment for stealing Apollo's sacred cows. When Hermes got caught, he made a musical instrument, the first lyre, and traded it to Apollo, who immediately forgave him. A few days ago, Piper mentioned seeing the cave on Pylos where Hermes hid those cows. That must have triggered Leo's subconscious. Without even meaning to, he'd built a musical instrument, which kind of surprised him, since he knew nothing about music.
Well, Leo said, this is quite simply the most amazing instrument ever.
How does it work? Asked the god.
Good question, Leo thought. He turned the crank handles, hoping the thing wouldn't explode in his face. A few clear tones rang out, metallic yet warm. Leo manipulated the levers and gears. He recognized the song that sprang forth, the same wistful melody Calypso sang for him on Ogygia about homesickness and longing. But through the strings of the brass cone, the tune sounded even sadder, like a machine with a broken heart, the way Festus might sound if he could sing. Leo forgot Apollo was there. He played the song all the way through. When he was done, his eyes stung. He could almost smell the fresh-baked bread from Calypso's kitchen. He could taste the only kiss she'd ever given him. Apollo stared in awe at the instrument.
I must have it! What is it called? What do you want for it?
Leo had a sudden instinct to hide the instrument and keep it for himself, but he swallowed his melancholy. He had a task to complete. Calypso. Calypso needed him to succeed.
This is the Valdezonator, of course.
He puffed out his chest.
It works by, translating your feelings into music as you manipulate the gears. It's really meant for me, a child of Hephaestus to use, though.
I don't know if you could...
I am the god of music, Apollo cried. I can certainly master the Valdezonator. I must. It is my duty.
So let's wheel and deal, Music Man, Leo said. I give you this. You give me the physician's cure.
Oh. Apollo bit his godly lip. Well, I don't actually have the physician's cure.
I thought you were the god of medicine.
Yes, but I am the god of many things. Poetry, music, the Delphic Oracle.
He broke into a sob and covered his mouth with his fist.
Sorry, I'm fine, I'm fine. As I was saying, I have many spheres of influence. Then, of course, I have the whole sun god gig, which I inherited from Helios. The point is, I'm rather like a general practitioner. For the physician's cure, you would need to see a specialist, the only one who has ever successfully cured death. My son, Asclepius, the god of healers.
Leo's heart sank into his socks. The last thing they needed was another quest to find another god, who would probably demand his own commemorative t-shirt or Valdezonator.
That's a shame, Apollo. I was hoping we could make a deal.
Leo turned the levers on his Valdezonator, coaxing out an even sadder tune.
Stop! Apollo wailed. It's too beautiful. I'll give you directions to Asclepius. He's really very close.
How do we know he'll help us? We've only got 2 days until Gia wakes.
He'll help, Apollo promised. My son is very helpful. Just plead with him in my name. You'll find him at his old temple in Epidaurus.
What's the catch?
Well, nothing. Except, of course, he's guarded.
Guarded by what?
I don't know.
Apollo spread his hands helplessly.
I only know Zeus is keeping Asclepius under guard so he doesn't go running around the world resurrecting people. The first time Asclepius raised the dead, well, he caused quite an uproar. It's a long story, but I'm sure you can convince him to help.
This isn't sounding like much of a deal, Leo said. What about the last ingredient, the curse of Delos? What is it?
Apollo eyed the Valdezonator greedily. Leo worried the god might just take it, and how could Leo stop him? Blasting the sun god with fire probably wouldn't do much good.
I can give the last ingredient to you, Apollo said. Then you'll have everything you need for Asclepius to brew the potion.
Leo played another verse.
I don't know.
Trading this beautiful Valdezonator for some Delos curse?
It's not actually a curse. Look.
Apollo sprinted to the nearest patch of wildflowers and picked a yellow one from a crack between the stones.
This is the curse of Delos.
Leo stared at it.
A cursed daisy?
Apollo sighed in exasperation.
That's just a nickname. When my mother, Leto, was ready to give birth to Artemis and me, Hera was angry because Zeus had cheated on her again. So she went around to every single landmass on Earth. She made the nature spirits in each place promise to turn my mother away, so she couldn't give birth anywhere.
Sounds like something Hera would do.
I know, right? Anyway, Hera exacted promises from every land that was rooted on the Earth, but not from Delos. Because back then, Delos was a floating island. The nature spirits of Delos welcomed my mother. She gave birth to my sister and me, and the island was so happy to be our new sacred home, it covered itself in these little yellow flowers. The flowers are a blessing, because we're awesome. But they also symbolize a curse, because once we were born, Delos got rooted in place and wasn't able to drift around the sea anymore. That's why yellow daisies are called the curse of Delos.
So I could have just picked a daisy myself and walked away.
No, no, not for the potion you have in mind. The flower would have to be picked by either my sister or me.
So what do you say, demigod?
Directions to Asclepius and your last magical ingredient, in exchange for that new musical instrument. Do we have a deal?
Leo hated to give away a perfectly good Valdezonator for a wildflower, but he saw no other choice.
You drive a hard bargain, music man.
They made the trade.
Excellent!
Apollo turned the levers of the Valdezonator, which made a sound like a car engine on a cold morning.
Perhaps it'll take some practice, but I'll get it. Now let us find your friends. The sooner you leave, the better.
Hazel and Frank waited at the Delos docks. Artemis was nowhere in sight. When Leo turned to tell Apollo goodbye, the god was gone too.
Man, Leo muttered, he was really anxious to practice his Valdezonator.
His what?
Hazel asked. Leo told them about his new hobby as a genius inventor of musical funnels. Frank scratched his head.
And in exchange you got a daisy?
It's the final ingredient to cure death, Jong. It's a super daisy. How about you guys? Learn anything from Artemis?
Unfortunately, yes.
Hazel gazed across the water, where the Argo II bobbed at anchor.
Artemis knows a lot about missile weapons. She told us Octavian has ordered some surprises for Camp Half-Blood. He's used most of the Legion's treasure to purchase Cyclopes-built onagers.
Oh no, not onagers,
Leo said.
Also, what's an onager?
Frank scowled.
You build machines. How can you not know what an onager is? It's just the biggest, baddest catapult ever used by the Roman army.
Fine, Leo said, but onager is a stupid name. They should have called them Valdezapults.
Hazel rolled her eyes.
Leo, this is serious. If Artemis is right, six of these machines will be rolling into Long Island tomorrow night. That's what Octavian has been waiting for. At dawn on August 1st, he'll have enough firepower to completely destroy Camp Half-Blood without a single Roman casualty. He thinks that'll make him a hero.
Frank muttered a Latin curse.
Except he's also summoned so many monstrous allies that the Legion is completely surrounded by wild centaurs, tribes of dog-headed cynocephali, and who knows what else. As soon as the Legion destroys Camp Half-Blood, the monsters will turn on Octavian and destroy the Legion.
And then Gia rises, Leo said, and bad stuff happens.
In his head, gears turned as the new information clicked into place.
All right, this just makes my plan even more important. Once we get this physician's cure, I'm going to need your help. Both of you.
Frank glanced nervously at the cursed yellow daisy.
What kind of help?
Leo told them his plan. The more he talked, the more shocked they looked, but when he was done, neither of them told him he was crazy. A tear glistened on Hazel's cheek.
It has to be this way, Leo said. Nike confirmed it. Apollo confirmed it. The others would never accept it, but you guys, you're Romans. That's why I wanted you to come to Delos with me. You get the whole sacrifice thing. Doing your duty. Jumping on your sword.
Frank sniffled.
I think you mean falling on your sword.
Whatever, Leo said. You know this has to be the answer.
Leo.
Frank choked up. Leo himself wanted to cry like a Valdezonator, but he kept his cool.
Hey, big guy, I'm counting on you. Remember you told me about that conversation with Mars? Your dad said you'd have to step up, right? You'd have to make the call nobody else was willing to make.
Or the war would go sideways, Frank remembered. But still.
And Hazel, Leo said. Crazy, mist-magic-y Hazel.
You've got to cover for me. You're the only one who can. My great-granddad Sammy saw how special you were. He blessed me when I was a baby because I think somehow he knew you were going to come back and help me. Our whole lives, mi amiga, they've been leading up to this.
Oh, Leo.
She really did burst into tears then. She grabbed him and hugged him, which was sweet, until Frank started crying too, and wrapped them both in his arms. That got a little weird.
Okay, well... Leo gently extricated himself. So we're in agreement?
I hate this plan, Frank said.
I despise it, Hazel said. Think how I feel, Leo said. But you know it's our best shot.
Neither of them argued. Leo kind of wished they had.
Let's get back to the ship, he said. We have a healer god to find.
Chapter 35. Leo. Leo spotted the secret entrance immediately.
Oh, that's beautiful.
He maneuvered the ship over the ruins of Epidaurus. The Argo II really wasn't in good shape to fly, but Leo had gotten her airborne after only one night of work. With the world ending tomorrow morning, he was highly motivated. He primed the oar flaps. He'd injected Styx water into the samoflange. He'd treated Festus, the figurehead, to his favorite brew, 30-weight motor oil and Tabasco sauce. Even Buford the Wonder Table had pitched in, rattling around below decks while his holographic mini hedge yelled, "Give me 30 push-ups!" to inspire the engine. Now, at last, they hovered over the ancient temple complex of the healing god Asclepius, where they could hopefully find the physician's cure, and maybe also some ambrosia, nectar, and fonzies, because Leo's supplies were running low. Next to him on the quarterdeck, Percy peered over the railing.
"Looks like more rubble," he noted.
His face was still green from his underwater poisoning, but at least he wasn't running to the bathroom to upchuck quite so often. Between him and Hazel's seasickness, it had been impossible to find an unoccupied toilet on board for the past few days. Annabeth pointed to the disc-shaped structure about 50 yards off their port side.
"There!"
Leo smiled.
"Exactly! See, the architect knows her stuff!"
The rest of the crew gathered around.
"What are we looking at?" Frank asked.
"Ah, Signor Zhang," Leo said. "You know how you're always saying, 'Leo, you are the only true genius among demigods?'"
"I'm pretty sure I never said that."
"Well, it turns out there are other true geniuses, because one of them must have made that work of art down there."
"It's a stone circle," Frank said. "Probably the foundation of an old shrine."
Piper shook her head.
"No, it's more than that. Look at the ridges and grooves carved around the rim."
"Like the teeth of a gear," Jason offered.
"And those concentric rings."
Hazel pointed to the center of the structure, where curved stones formed a sort of bullseye.
"The pattern reminds me of Pacify's pendant, the symbol of the labyrinth."
"Huh," Leo scowled.
"Well, I hadn't thought of that, but think mechanical. Frank, Hazel, where did we see concentric circles like that before?"
"The laboratory under Rome," Frank said.
"The Archimedes lock on the door," Hazel recalled. "It had rings within rings."
Percy snorted.
"You're telling me that's a massive stone lock? It's like 50 feet in diameter."
"Leo might be right," Annabeth said. "In ancient times, the Temple of Asclepius was like the general hospital of Greece. Everybody came here for the best healing. Above ground, it was the size of a major city, but supposedly the real action happened below ground. That's where the high priests had their intensive care, super-magical-type compound, accessed by a secret passage."
Percy scratched his ear.
So if that big round thing is the lock, how do we get the key?
Way ahead of you, Aquaman, Leo said.
Okay, do not call me Aquaman. That's even worse than Water Boy.
Leo turned to Jason and Piper.
You guys remember the giant Archimedes grabber arm I told you I was building?
Jason raised an eyebrow. I thought you were kidding.
Oh, my friend, I never kid about giant grabber arms.
Leo rubbed his hands in anticipation.
It's time to go fishing for prizes.
Compared to the other modifications Leo had made to the ship, the grabber arm was a piece of cake. Originally, Archimedes had designed it to pluck enemy ships out of the water. Now Leo found another use for it. He opened the hull's forward access vent and extended the arm, guided by the console monitor and Jason, who flew outside, yelling directions.
Left, Jason called. A couple of inches. Yeah. Okay, down. Keep it coming. You're good.
Using his trackpad and turntable controls, Leo opened the claw. Its prongs settled around the grooves in the circular stone structure below. He checked the aerial stabilizers and the monitor's video feed.
Okay, little buddy.
Leo patted the Archimedes sphere embedded in the helm.
This is all you.
He activated the sphere. The grabber arm began to turn like a corkscrew. It rotated the outer ring of stone, which grinded and rumbled, but thankfully didn't shatter. Then the claw detached, fixed itself around the second stone ring, and turned it in the opposite direction. Standing next to him at the monitor, Piper kissed him on the cheek.
It's working! Leo, you're amazing!
Leo grinned. He was about to make a comment about his own awesomeness, then he remembered the plan he had worked out with Hazel and Frank, and the fact that he might never see Piper again after tomorrow. The joke sort of died in his throat.
Yeah, well, thanks, Beauty Queen.
Below them, the last stone ring turned and settled with a deep pneumatic hiss. The entire 50-foot pedestal telescoped downward into a spiral staircase. Hazel exhaled.
Leo, even from up here, I'm sensing bad stuff at the bottom of those stairs. Something large and dangerous. You sure you don't want me to come along? Thanks, Hazel, but we'll be good.
He patted Piper on the back.
Me and Piper and Jason, we're old pros at large and dangerous.
Frank held out the vial of Pelosian mint.
Don't break it.
Leo nodded gravely.
Don't break the vial of deadly poison. Man, I'm glad you said that. Never would have occurred to me.
Shut up, Valdez.
Frank gave him a bear hug.
And be careful.
Ribs!
Leo squeaked.
Sorry.
Annabeth and Percy wished them good luck. Then Percy excused himself to go throw up. Jason summoned the winds and whisked Piper and Leo down to the surface. The stairs spiraled downward about 60 feet before opening into a chamber as large as Bunker 9, which is to say, ginormous. The polished white tiles on the walls and floor reflected the light of Jason's sword so well that Leo didn't need to make a fire. Rows of long stone benches filled the entire chamber, reminding Leo of one of those mega churches they always advertised back in Houston. At the far end of the room, where the altar would have been, stood a 10-foot-tall statue of pure white alabaster. A young woman in a white robe, a serene smile on her face. In one hand, she raised a cup, while a golden serpent coiled around her arm, its head poised over the brim, as if ready to drink.
Large and dangerous, Jason guessed.
Piper scanned the room.
This must have been the sleeping area.
Her voice echoed a little too loudly for Leo's comfort.
The patients stayed here overnight. The god Asclepius was supposed to send them a dream, telling them what cure to ask for.
How do you know that?
Leo asked.
Annabeth told you?
Piper looked offended.
I know stuff. That statue over there is Hygieia, the daughter of Asclepius. She's the goddess of good health. That's where we get the word hygiene.
Jason studied the statue warily.
What's with the snake in the cup?
Not sure, Piper admitted.
But back in the day, this place, the Asclepion, was a medical school, as well as a hospital. All the best doctor priests trained here. They would have worshipped both Asclepius and Hygieia.
Leo wanted to say, okay, good tour, let's leave. The silence, the gleaming white tiles, the creepy smile on Hygieia's face, it all made him want to crawl out of his skin. But Jason and Piper headed down the center aisle toward the statue, so Leo figured he'd better follow. Strewn across the benches were old magazines. Highlights for Children, Autumn 20 BCE. Hephaestus TV Weekly, Aphrodite's Latest Baby Bump. A. The Magazine of Asclepius, 10 Simple Tips to Get the Most Out of Your Leeching.
It's a reception area, Leo muttered. I hate reception areas.
Here and there, piles of dust and scattered bones lay on the floor, which did not say encouraging things about the average wait time.
Check it out, Jason pointed. Were those signs here when we walked in? And that door?
Leo didn't think so. On the wall to the right of the statue, above a closed metal door, were two electronic signboards. The top one read, "The doctor is incarcerated." The sign below that read, "Now serving number 000000."
Jason squinted. "I can't read it that far away. The doctor is incarcerated," Leo said. "Apollo warned me that Asclepius was being held under guard. Zeus didn't want him sharing his medical secrets or something."
$20 and a box of Fruit Loops, that statue is the guardian," Piper said.
"I'm not taking that bet."
Leo glanced at the nearest pile of waiting room dust.
"Well, I guess we take a number."
The giant statue had other ideas. When they got within 5 feet, she turned her head and looked at them. Her expression remained frozen. Her mouth didn't move. But a voice issued from somewhere above, echoing through the room.
"Do you have an appointment?"
Piper didn't miss a beat.
"Hello, Hygieia. Apollo sent us. We need to see Asclepius."
The alabaster statue stepped off her dais. She might have been mechanical, but Leo couldn't hear any moving parts. To be certain, he'd actually have to touch her, and he didn't want to get that close.
"I see,"
the statue kept smiling, though she didn't sound pleased.
"May I make a copy of your insurance cards?" "Ah, well," Piper faltered. "We don't have them on us, but..." "No insurance cards?"
The statue shook her head. An exasperated sigh echoed through the chamber.
"I suppose you haven't prepared for your visit either. Have you washed your hands thoroughly?"
Yes, Piper said. Leo looked at his hands, which, as usual, were streaked with grease and grime. He hid them behind his back.
"Are you wearing clean underwear?"
the statue asked.
"Hey, lady," Leo said. "That's getting personal." "You should always wear clean underwear to the doctor's office," chided Hygieia. "I'm afraid you are a health hazard. You will have to be sanitized before we can proceed."
The golden snake uncurled and dropped from her arm. It reared its head and hissed, flashing saber-like fangs.
You know," Jason said, "getting sanitized by large snakes isn't covered by our medical plan, darn it."
"Oh, that doesn't matter," Hygieia assured him.
Sanitizing is a community service. It's complimentary.
The snake lunged.
Leo had a lot of practice dodging mechanical monsters, which was good, because the golden serpent was fast. Leo leaped to one side, and the snake missed his head by an inch. Leo rolled and came up, hands blazing. As the snake attacked, Leo blasted it in the eyes, causing it to veer left and smash into the bench. Piper and Jason went to work on Hygieia. They slashed through the statue's knees, felling her like an alabaster Christmas tree. Her head hit a bench. Her chalice splashed steaming acid all over the floor. Jason and Piper moved in for the kill, but before they could strike, Hygieia's legs popped back on, like they were magnetic. The goddess rose, still smiling.
"Unacceptable," she said. "The doctor will not see you until you are properly sanitized."
She sloshed her cup toward Piper, who jumped out of the way as more acid splashed across the nearest benches, dissolving the stone in a hissing cloud of steam. The snake, meanwhile, recovered its senses. Its melted metal eyes somehow repaired themselves. Its face popped back into shape, like a dent-resistant car hood. It struck at Leo, who ducked and tried to grapple its neck, but it was like trying to grab sandpaper going 60 miles an hour. The serpent shot past, its rough metal skin leaving Leo's hands scraped and bleeding. The momentary contact did give Leo some insight, however. The snake was a machine. He sensed its inner workings, and if the statue of Hygieia operated on a similar schematic, Leo might have a chance. Across the room, Jason soared into the air and lopped the goddess's head off. Sadly, the head flew right back into place.
"Unacceptable," Hygieia said calmly. "Decapitation is not a healthy lifestyle choice."
"Jason, get over here," Leo yelled. "Piper, buy us some time."
Piper glanced over like, easier said than done.
"Hygieia," she yelled. "I have insurance."
That got the statue's attention. Even the golden snake turned toward her, as if insurance was some sort of tasty rodent.
"Insurance?" the statue said eagerly. "Who is your provider?"
Blue Lightning," Piper said. "I have the card right here. Just a second."
She made a big show of patting down her pockets. The snake slithered over to watch. Jason ran to Leo's side, gasping.
"What's the plan?"
"We can't destroy these things," Leo said. "They're designed for self-healing. They're immune to pretty much every kind of damage."
"Great," Jason said. "So,
you remember Chiron's old gaming system?" Leo asked.
Jason's eyes widened.
"Leo, this isn't Mario Party 6.
"Same principle, though."
"Idiot mode?"
Leo grinned.
"I'll need you and Piper to run interference. I'll reprogram the snake, then Big Bertha. Hygieia. Whatever. Ready?"
"No."
Leo and Jason ran for the snake. Hygieia was assailing Piper with healthcare questions.
"Is Blue Lightning an HMO? What is your deductible? Who is your primary care deity?"
As Piper ad-libbed answers, Leo jumped on the serpent's back. This time, he knew what he was looking for, and for a moment, the serpent didn't even seem to notice him. Leo pried open a service panel near the snake's head. He held on with his legs, trying to ignore the pain and sticky blood on his hands as he redid the serpent's wiring. Jason stood by, ready to attack, but the snake seemed transfixed by Piper's problems with Blue Lightning's coverage.
"Then the advice nurse said I had to call a service center," Piper reported, "and the medications weren't covered by my plan, and..."
The snake lurched as Leo connected the last two wires.
Leo jumped off, and the golden serpent began shaking uncontrollably.
Hygieia whirled to face them.
"What have you done? My snake requires medical assistance."
"Does it have insurance?" Piper asked.
What?
The statue turned back to her, and Leo jumped. Jason summoned a gust of wind, which boosted Leo onto the statue's shoulders like a little kid at a parade. Leo popped open the back of the statue's head as she staggered around, sloshing acid.
Get off! She yelled. This is not hygienic!
Hey! Jason yelled, flying circles around her. I have a question about my deductibles.
What?
The statue cried.
Hygieia! Piper shouted. I need an invoice submitted to Medicare. No, please!
Leo found the statue's regulator chip. He clicked a few dials and pulled some wires, trying to pretend that Hygieia was just one large, dangerous Nintendo game system. He reconnected her circuits, and Hygieia began to spin, hollering and flailing her arms. Leo jumped away, barely avoiding an acid bath. He and his friends backed up, while Hygieia and her snake underwent a violent religious experience.
What did you do? Piper demanded. Idiot mode, Leo said. Excuse me?
Back at camp, Jason explained. Chiron had this ancient gaming system in the rec room. Leo and I used to play it sometimes. You'd compete against, like, computer-controlled opponents. Comms.
And they had three difficulty options, Leo said. Easy, medium, and hard.
I've played video games before, Piper said. So what did you do?
Well, I got bored with those settings,
Leo shrugged.
So I invented a fourth difficulty level, idiot mode. It makes the comms so stupid it's funny. They always choose exactly the wrong thing to do.
Piper stared at the statue and snake, both of which were writhing and starting to smoke.
Are you sure you set them to idiot mode?
We'll know in a minute.
What if you set them to extreme difficulty?
Then we'll know that too. The snake stopped shuddering. It coiled up and looked around, as if bewildered. Hygieia froze. A puff of smoke drifted from her right ear. She looked down at Leo.
You must die! Hello? You must die!
She raised her cup and poured acid over her face. Then she turned and marched face first into the nearest wall. The snake reared up and slammed his head repeatedly into the floor.
Okay, Jason said. I think we have achieved idiot mode.
Hello, die!
Hygieia backed up from the wall and face slammed it again.
Let's go!
Leo ran for the metal door next to the dais. He grabbed the handle. It was still locked, but Leo sensed the mechanisms inside. Wires running up the frame, connected to... He stared at the two blinking signs above the door.
Jason, he said, give me a boost.
Another gust of wind levitated him upward. Leo went to work with his pliers, reprogramming the signs until the top one flashed, "The doctor is in the house." The bottom sign changed to read, "Now serving, all the ladies love Leo." The metal door swung open, and Leo settled to the floor.
See, the wait wasn't so bad.
Leo grinned at his friends.
The doctor will see us now.
Chapter 36. Leo. At the end of the hall stood a walnut door with a bronze plaque. Asclepius, M.D., D.M.D., D.M.E., D.C., D.V.S., F.A.A.N., O.M.G., E.M.T., T.T.Y.L., F.R.C.P., M.E., I.O.U., O.D., O.T., P.H.A.R.M.D., B.A.M.F., R.N., Ph.D., I.N.C., S.M.H. There may have been more acronyms in the list, but by that point, Leo's brain had exploded. Piper knocked.
Dr. Asclepius?
The door flew open. A man inside had a kindly smile, crinkles around his eyes, short salt-and-pepper hair, and a well-trimmed beard. He wore a white lab coat over a business suit and a stethoscope around his neck. Your stereotypical doctor outfit, except for one thing. Asclepius held a polished black staff with a live green python coiled around it. Leo wasn't happy to see another snake. The python regarded him with pale yellow eyes, and Leo had a feeling it was not set to idiot mode.
"Hello," said Asclepius.
"Doctor." Piper's smile was so warm it would have melted a Boread.
"We'd be so grateful for your help. We need the physician's cure."
Leo wasn't even her target, but Piper's charm speak washed over him irresistibly. He would have done anything to help her get that cure. He would have gone to medical school, gotten 12 doctorate degrees, and bought a large green python on a stick. Asclepius put his hand over his heart.
"Oh, my dear, I would be delighted to help."
Piper's smile wavered.
"You would? I mean, of course you would."
"Come in, come in."
Asclepius ushered them into his office. The guy was so nice, Leo figured his office would be full of torture devices. But it looked like, well, a doctor's office. A big maple desk, bookshelves stuffed with medical books, and some of those plastic organ models Leo loved to play with as a kid. He remembered getting in trouble one time because he had turned a cross-section kidney and some skeleton legs into a kidney monster and scared the nurse. Life was simpler back then. Asclepius took the big comfy doctor's chair and laid his staff and serpent across his desk.
"Please sit."
Jason and Piper took the two chairs on the patient's side. Leo had to remain standing, which was fine with him. He didn't want to be eye level with the snake.
"So," Asclepius leaned back, "I can't tell you how nice it is to actually talk with patients. The last few thousand years, the paperwork has gotten out of control. Rush, rush, rush. Fill in forms, deal with red tape. Not to mention the giant alabaster guardian who kills everyone in the waiting room. It takes all the fun out of medicine."
"Yeah," Leo said. "Hygieia is kind of a downer."
Asclepius grinned.
"My real daughter Hygieia isn't like that, I assure you. She's quite nice. At any rate, you did well reprogramming the statue. You have a surgeon's hands."
Jason shuddered. "Leo with a scalpel? Don't encourage him." The doctor god chuckled.
"Now, what seems to be the trouble?"
He sat forward and peered at Jason.
Imperial gold sword wound. But that's healed nicely. No cancer, no heart problems. Watch that mole on your left foot, but I'm sure it's benign."
Jason blanched.
"How did you..."
"Oh, of course," Asclepius said. "You're a bit nearsighted. Simple fix."
He opened his drawer, whipped out a prescription pad and an eyeglasses case. He scribbled something on the pad, then handed the glasses and the script to Jason.
"Keep the prescription for future reference, but these lenses should work. Try them on."
"Wait," Leo said. "Jason is nearsighted?"
Jason opened the case.
I have had a little trouble seeing stuff from a distance lately," he admitted. "I thought I was just tired."
He tried on the glasses, which had thin frames of imperial gold.
"Wow! Yeah! That's better!"
Piper smiled. "You look very distinguished."
"I don't know, man," Leo said. "I'd go for contacts. Glowing orange ones with cat's eye pupils. Those would be cool."
"Glasses are fine," Jason decided. "Thanks, Dr. Asclepius, but that's not why we came."
"No?"
Asclepius steepled his fingers.
"Well, let's see then."
He turned to Piper.
You seem fine, my dear. Broken arm when you were 6. Fell off a horse?
Piper's jaw dropped.
How could you possibly know that?
Vegetarian diet, he continued. No problem. Just make sure you're getting enough iron and protein. A little weak in the left shoulder. I assume you got hit with something heavy about a month ago?
A sandbag in Rome, Piper said. That's amazing.
Alternate ice and a hot pack if it bothers you, Asclepius advised. And you?
He faced Leo.
Oh, my.
The doctor's expression turned grim. The friendly twinkle disappeared from his eyes.
Oh, I see.
The doctor's expression said, I am so, so sorry. Leo's heart filled with cement. If he'd harbored any last hopes of avoiding what was to come, they now sank. What? Jason's new glasses flashed. What's wrong with Leo?
Hey, Doc.
Leo shot him a drop-it look. Hopefully they knew about patient confidentiality in ancient Greece.
We came for the physician's cure. Can you help us? I've got some Pylosian mint here, and a very nice yellow daisy.
He set the ingredients on the desk, carefully avoiding the snake's mouth.
Hold it, Piper said. Is there something wrong with Leo or not?
Asclepius cleared his throat.
Never mind. Forget I said anything. Now, you want the physician's cure.
Piper frowned.
But, seriously, guys, Leo said, I'm fine, except for the fact that Gia's destroying the world tomorrow. Let's focus.
They didn't look happy about it, but Asclepius forged ahead.
So this daisy was picked by my father, Apollo?
Yep, Leo said. He sends hugs and kisses.
Asclepius picked up the flower and sniffed it.
I do hope Dad comes through this war all right. Zeus can be quite unreasonable. Now, the only missing ingredient is the heartbeat of the chained god.
I have it, Piper said. At least, I can summon the Makai.
Excellent. Just a moment, dear.
He looked at his python.
Spike, are you ready?
Leo stifled a laugh.
Your snake's name is Spike?
Spike looked at him balefully. He hissed, revealing a crown of spikes around his neck like a basilisk's. Leo's laugh crawled back down his throat to die.
My bad,
he said.
Of course your name is Spike.
He's a little grumpy, Asclepius said. People are always confusing my staff with the staff of Hermes, which has 2 snakes, obviously. Over the centuries, people have called Hermes' staff the symbol of medicine, when of course it should be my staff. Spike feels slighted. George and Martha get all the attention. Anyway.
Asclepius set the daisy and poison in front of Spike.
Pylosian mint. Certainty of death. The curse of Delos, anchoring that which cannot be anchored. Now the final ingredient, the heartbeat of the chained god, chaos, violence, and fear of mortality.
He turned to Piper.
My dear, you may release the Makai.
Piper closed her eyes. Wind swirled through the room. Angry voices wailed. Leo felt a strange desire to smack Spike with a hammer. He wanted to strangle the good doctor with his bare hands. Then Spike unhinged his jaw and swallowed the angry wind. His neck ballooned as the spirits of battle went down his throat. He snapped up the daisy and the vial of Pylosian mint for dessert.
Won't the poison hurt him?
Jason asked.
No, no, Asclepius said. Wait and see.
A moment later, Spike belched out a new vial. a stopper glass tube no bigger than Leo's finger. Dark red liquid glowed inside.
The physician's cure.